Narayanam Namaskrityam Naroam Chaivam Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Satojayam Udirayet Nasta Prayeshu Abhatreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So we're on the eighth canto with today's text, chapter 24, and it's text 48. But in the meantime, since you haven't been, you don't know this story, theoretically anyway, let's look it up in, can we get the verses to this chapter 24, just the verses when you're ready? Okay, so I'll just read from page 75 in Narayani's book, Bhagavatam at a Glance. This class is on Matsya, the fish incarnation. So she says here, just as Vamanadeva expands from a dwarf to a universal form, Lord Matsya expands from a tiny fish to a fish millions of miles long. Lord Matsya appears in the ocean of inundation to protect King Satyavrata and the seven sages. After Satyavrata offers prayers, the Lord teaches Vedic knowledge to the king and the saintly persons in the boat anchored to Matsya's horn. So there's a lot of very interesting and very difficult to comprehend information in this chapter, but, you know, that's the nature of the Lord. He's beyond our limited power to understand him. So we have chapter 24, Matsya, the Lord's fish incarnation. We'll read some of the verses so you can get the, we can see the story here. Maharaj Parikit said, you want to read it? Yeah, because it's like, you get a twist.
Oh. Eternally situated in his transcendental position, yet he descends to this material world and manifests himself in various incarnations. His first incarnation was that of a great fish. O most powerful Sukadeva Goswami, I wish to hear from you pastimes of that fish incarnation. Should I read the next part or pass it on?
You can pass it on. Sorry. We'll come around this way.
What was the purpose for which the Supreme Personality of God had accepted the abominable form of fish, exactly as ordinary living beings accept different forms under the law of karma? The form of a fish is certainly condemned and full of terrible pain. O my Lord, what was the purpose of this incarnation? Kindly explain this to us. For hearing about the pastime of the Lord is auspicious for everyone.
So that's the point there. Hearing about the pastimes of the Lord are auspicious, and they bring us, it takes you out of your concept of life as you know it, you know? And to understand, like, if it was like the pastimes of a horse or a cow or this or that, at least in this life, we can relate to the beauty of those animals. But being attracted to a fish, it's like, you know, something else, right? But Krishna, in the form of a fish, was actually quite attractive. Okay, you can go.
Sudha Goswami said, when Parikshit Maharaj thus inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, the most powerful saintly person began describing the pastimes of the Lord's incarnation as a fish.
In the purports to these verses, Prabhupada, because in the previous verse, Parikshit Maharaj was describing it's an abominable form full of fear and everything. Prabhupada says there that every living entity has, I think it's in that verse, but anyway, and every living entity has a particular shakti, a potency. And so the fish, just an ordinary fish, they have living in the water, but their potency is that they're so sensitive to the vibrations in the water that they can feel the presence of a predator coming from miles. So they're always fearful. That's the point he's making, that in that life, you're in that situation, you're always fearful because you're thinking, who's coming? Go on.
Sri Sukadev Goswami said, O King, for the sake of protecting the cows, brahmanas, demigods, devotees, the Vedic literature, religious principles, and principles to fulfill the purpose of life, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts the forms of incarnations.
So that's, we say that the Lord comes in all these different incarnations. He actually, it's explained that he comes in every species of life. Because why? Because he's concerned about attracting the living entities back to him. Because we're so forgetful. He comes in, but he doesn't just come in the human form of life. We have a tendency to think we're the most important and everyone else is not so important. You know, dogs are, they're just low life. But actually the same batteries that are charging our body are charging the dog's body. The same spirit soul, the same potency that's there, that's in our body, that's keeping us, the difference between a live body and a dead body, is the same for an ant, same for a dog, same for all a piece of grass. It's the same spirit soul. The potency is there and covered by the modes of material nature. And Krishna being not partial, has a loving concern for all of those living entities. So he incarnates, and not just once, but over and over and over again to attract living entities. Okay, oh, yes?
He takes those forms as like animals, fish, and boars, but he does that for the human form, right?
He does it for every form. He does it for the humans to become attracted to his pastimes, because that's the form of life where you can actually consider, what am I here for? The dog can't really, but still they can become attracted. Because Prabhupada says because it's not going to be by chance. Yeah. It's inconceivable. Krishna's mercy is inconceivable, isn't it? That, so they might be there around. Even it was explained in Varaha, before Nityananda's appearance day, Lord Varaha's appeared. When Lord Varaha, he took the form of a hog. Why? Because he had to dig the earth out of a filthy place because it had fallen into the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean, right? You got that one, right? So he took the form of a hog and with his snout, with his nose, dug the earth out. Then after he placed the earth back in her position, he shook his body, right? So like, you ever been near a wet dog that when he shakes, you think, get me out of here, It's like all this filthy stuff coming off him. So the hog, one might think, similar. But actually, all the living entities were purified and that got sprinkled by the water from the transcendental form of the Lord.
Like the air passing through different types of atmosphere, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although appearing sometimes as a human being and sometimes as a lower animal, is always transcendental. Because he is above the material modes of nature, he is unaffected by higher and lower forms.
Now that explanation about the air passing through different atmospheres, that's given in various literatures, even in Bhagavad Gita. So, if the air is passing over a rose garden, it takes a nice fragrance. The air is passing over the garbage dump, it takes on the fragrance of the garbage dump. The air is the same. It takes on that fragrance, but the air is the same. And a less intelligent person, the Bhagavatam explains, will think that the air, or let's say even if the air is passing over like a dusty area, so the dust particles get caught in the air. So a less intelligent person thinks that the air is dirty. The air is not dirty. The air just has dust particle in it. The air is clean. So what's referring to is the transcendental position of the Lord. He might take on a form of a this or a that, which to our eyes might appear as higher or lower forms. He's totally transcendental all the time and completely aware of it. Similarly, the conditioned soul, we are transcendental to this situation, but we're not aware of it. I mean, our soul has nothing to do with the body, but we're all completely absorbed in thinking that this is who we are. It's our mentality that's contaminated. But the soul is pure. Jita?
O King Parikshit, at the end of the past millennium, at the end of Brahma's day, because Lord Brahma sleeps during the night, annihilation took place, and the three worlds were covered by the water of the ocean.
Now, I think in this verse, in the purport, Prabhupada gives some interesting information based on Srila Jiva Goswami's information, because Jiva Goswami, he says, this didn't take place at Brahma's night. He says it didn't take place in Brahma's night. He says, Jiva Goswami says, that, because right here it said that this is happening when Brahma goes to sleep, the annihilation takes place. When Brahma, at the end of Brahma's day, the worlds are covered by the waters of devastation. Jiva Goswami says this actually didn't take place during Brahma's night. It was just a time of day when he was taking a nap. He was just a little sleepy. By the will of the Supreme Lord, he got a little sleepy. And so, just at least information. Baladev, you get to read?
Yes.
When you get out of trance.
What am I?
You're on 4, 9, understanding, I think, right?
8. At the end of Brahma's day, when Brahma felt sleep and desired to lay down, the Vedas were emanating from his mouth, and the great demon named
Hayagriva
stole the Vedic knowledge.
Now, you probably had to do a double take because there's two Hayagrivas. There's a demon Hayagriva and there's the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hayagriva. Okay.
Now we're on 9.
Yes.
Understanding the acts of the great demon Hayagriva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, who was full of opulences, assumed the form of a fish and saved the Vedas by killing the demon.
That specific pastime is not very clearly enunciated in the Bhagavatam. The part of saving the Vedas and everything is there, and the fish, as you'll continue to see, but skips over the killing of Hayagriva part. Prabhu?
During the Chakshus Manvantara, there was a great king named Satyavrata, who was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Satyavrata performed austerities by subsisting only on water.
In this, the present millennium, King Satyavrata later became the son of Vivashwam, the king of the sun planet, and was known as Shraddhadev. By the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was given the post of Manu.
One day while King Satyavrata was performing austerities by offering water on the bank of river Kritamala, a small fish appeared in the water in his palms.
Satyavrata, the king of Dravida Desh, threw the fish into the water of the river along with the waters in his palm. O King Parikshit, descendants of Bharata.
So this is Satyavrata.
I don't know. You mean Satyavrata Muni who wrote the Damodar Asikam? Is that what? Because who are you referring to? Is it the same? Is it?
There's no Manu right by that
name. No. He becomes a Manu. He's Shraddhadev. Zach?
With an appalling voice, the poor small fish said to King Satyavrata, thank you, who was very merciful, "My dear king, protector of the poor, why are you throwing me in the water of the river, where there are other aquatics who can kill me? I am very much afraid of them."
A little unusual, no? There's King Satyavrata performing his, vows in the morning. The fish comes in his palms, throws it back in the water. And the fish says, "Oh, king, I'm afraid."
To please himself, King Satyavrata, not knowing that the fish was the Supreme Personality of God, had decided with great pleasure to give the fish protection.
The merciful king, being moved by the pitiful words of the fish, placed the fish in the water jug and brought him to his own residence.
And then what happened?
That is verse number?
17.
But in one night, that fish grew so much that he could not move his body comfortably in the water of the pot. He then spoke to the king as follows.
Oh, my dear king, I do not like living in this water pot with such great difficulties. Therefore, please find some better reservoir of water where I can live comfortably.
Then taking the fish out of the water pot, the king threw him in a large well. But within a moment, the fish developed to the length of 3 cubits.
The fish then said, "My dear king, this reservoir of water is not fit for my happy residence. Please give me a more extensive pool of water, for I have taken shelter of you."
Oh, Maharaj Parikshit, the king took the fish from the well and threw him in the lake. But the fish then assumed a gigantic form exceeding the extent of the water.
The fish then said, "O king, I am a large aquatic, and this water is not all suitable for me. Now kindly find some way to save me. It would be better to put me in the water of a lake that will never reduce."
When thus requested, King Satyavrata took the fish to the largest reservoir of water, but when that also proved insufficient, the king at last threw the gigantic fish into the ocean.
While being thrown in the ocean, the fish said to King Satyavrata, "O hero, in this water there are very powerful and dangerous sharks that will eat me. Therefore you should not throw me in this place."
Amidah.
After hearing these sweet words from the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of a fish, the king, being bewildered, asked him, "Who are you, sir? You simply bewilder us."
Now, just see if that was, if we were in that situation, what presence of mind you would have to have that attitude. You know, we're thinking, we might think so many things, but to actually have a respectful attitude and be that conscious, it just goes to show how highly elevated King Satyavrata Muni was. He was aware of the potency of the personality of Godhead. He wasn't aware that this fish was the Lord just yet, but still, seeing this amazing occurrence of the fish getting bigger overnight in by huge proportions, he's thinking, who else can do this but the Lord? So you have to be you have to be a God conscious person, obviously, to think like that. Otherwise, you're thinking so many things. Aladdin?
My Lord, in one day you have expanded yourself for hundreds of miles, covering the water of the rivers and the ocean. Before this, I had never seen or heard of such an aquatic animal.
My Lord, you are certainly the inexhaustible Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, Sri Hari, Narayan, Sri Hari. It is to show your mercy to the living entities that you have now assumed the form of an aquatic.
O my Lord, Master of creation, maintenance, and annihilation, O best of enjoyers, Lord Vishnu, you are the leader and destination of surrendered devotees like us. Therefore, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you.
All your pastimes and incarnations certainly appear for the welfare of all living entities. Therefore, my Lord, I wish to know the purpose for which you have assumed this form of a fish.
O my Lord, possessing eyes like the petals of a lotus, the worship of the demigods who are in the bodily concept of life is fruitless in all respects. But because you are the supreme friend and dear most super soul of everyone, worship of your lotus feet is never useless. You have therefore manifested your form as a fish.
So again, it's interesting to think the state, to actually pause a minute and think of the state of mind of King Satyavrata Muni. He could understand that although he wasn't aware of any information of a fish incarnation of the Lord, still he inquired very submissively and very respectfully so that the Lord would be pleased to reveal his purpose in taking this unusual form as a fish. And at the same time, a couple of verses previous, he's saying, you're the master of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. So there's something in there in the scope of the three phases of time. There's something in there, some reason that you've taken this form of a fish. And I know that you've done it to attract all the living entities. So what is this bewildering activity that you could, how could you be taking this form and still be attractive to all living entities, which we'll now find out in these next few verses.
Shukdev Goswami said, when King Satyavrata spoke in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who at the end of Yuga had assumed the form of a fish to bereft, to benefit his devotee and enjoy his pastimes in the water of inundation, responded as follows.
So interesting, the Lord has a purpose for the benefit of human beings, but also he had a desire to surf a little bit, I guess you could say. He wanted to experience what it was like in those waters of inundation. So he's what? A person, the supreme transcendental person, who's always enjoying pleasure pastimes, no matter what they are. It's pleasurable for the Lord. Zach?
When all the three worlds merge into the water...
Oh, 32. Go up one.
Oh, sorry. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O King, who can subdue your enemies on the seventh day from today, the three worlds? Buru, Bura,
Buva, and Sva.
And Sva will all merge into the water of
inundation. So he's giving him a little hint. 7 days from now, there's going to be a lot of water. So it's good to be a fish. No, go on. 33?
When all the three worlds merge into the water, a large boat sent by me will appear before you.
This is a little familiar storyline here.
Thereafter, O King, you shall collect all types of herbs and seeds and load them onto the great boat. Then accompanied by the seven rishis and surrounded by all kinds of living entities, you shall get aboard that boat. And without moroseness, you shall easily travel with your companions on the ocean of inundation. The only illumination being the effulgence of the great rishis.
So it's totally dark. It's one thing to be on an ocean that's the waves are really high. There's a storm. It's another thing to be on the ocean at night. And it's totally dark, and you can't even see the waves coming, so to speak. But there is one light. What's the light?
The rishis,
effulgence. So, go on.
Then as the boat is tossed about by the powerful winds, attach the vessel to my horn by means of the great serpent Vasuki, for I shall be present by your side.
So all of these things are like totally inconceivable, because we're not so familiar with any fishes that have any horns. But still, the Lord is capable of doing anything and straightening out any situation. So if he's sending a boat for Satyavrata Muni and the seven rishis and all the herbs and plants and living entities are supposed to go on that boat, and so how is the Lord in the form of the fish going to take care of that boat? So he has a horn, and then he's got the rope of Vasuki to attach to the boat, and he's got it all figured out.
Pulling the boat with you and all the rishis in it, O King, I shall travel in the water of devastation until the night of Lord Brahma's slumber is over.
So who knows how long the night of Lord Brahma is? It's way more than that. 4,300,000 years. It's just his night. So this is, and his day is obviously the same length. 4,300,000 years. So this was a nap. So it probably wasn't quite so long. But still, we have a different, you know, you get a different perspective of time.
He's saying the night.
Yeah.
So what are you saying is,
I was quoting Jiva Goswami.
Here is saying
Yeah. So there's, so when Krishna, his incarnations don't come just once. You know, like Krishna didn't lift Govardhan Hill once and that was it. He's always doing pastimes in every planet, every universe, every creation. He's manifesting his pastimes according to different schedules. So the pastimes are eternal. So sometimes the Bhagavatam will speak of one pastime and it will give information from different pastimes, different times that the pastime was performed. So sometimes you get an overlapping. And also, are you about to say that there were two Matsya incarnations? It's there in the, it's also there in the verses, in the purport, that there was two incarnations of Matsya, just as there were two different incarnations of Varaha. He came one time as Shveta, white Varaha, one time he came as a red Varaha, reddish color. So there's, so sometimes we're getting, so like when the Jiva Goswami is saying, oh, this time it wasn't a night, it was a slumber. It's just, it doesn't mean that the Bhagavatam's wrong. It's just he's giving us insight that only a self-realized soul could understand, that this particular time, it's a nap. The other times, it was a night time of Brahma. But the information there ultimately ends up being the same information. Just the detail of that from the acharyas is sometimes given.
Mataji, can you read the purport of verse 37?
Okay. I can with Nimai Pandit's help. 37. Up there, there.
Oh,
whoa,
no.
There. 37. Okay. This particular devastation actually took place. This is from, not during the night of Brahma, but during his day. For it was during the, see, there's always a reason, because now you're going to hear about somebody getting cursed, and so he was supposed to see the devastation. And so there's a reason. Okay. Well, it was during the time of Chakshushamama, Manu. Brahma's night takes place when Brahma goes to sleep, but in the daytime there are 14 Manus, one of whom is Chakshushamanu. So if you're familiar with the Manus, if you know the order of the Manus, you could, by knowing which Manu it is, you could know which time of day it is for Brahma.
This is just before the present.
See? Somebody knows. Okay, just before the present. Okay. Therefore, Srila Vishwanath Chakravati Thakur comments that although it was daytime for, oh, it was Vishwanath. I kept saying it was Jiva. Okay. Although it was daytime for Brahma, Brahma felt sleepy for a short time by the supreme will of the Lord. This short period is regarded as Brahma's night. This has been elaborately discussed by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Lagu Bhagavatamrita. The following is a summary of his analysis. And here's the reason. Because Agastya Muni cursed Swayambhuva Manu, during the time of Swayambhuva Manu, a devastation took place. This devastation is mentioned in the Matsya Purana. During the time of the Chakshushamanu, by the supreme will of the Lord, there was suddenly another pralaya. Pralaya means devastation, or devastation. This is mentioned by Markandeya Rishi in the Vishnu Damottara. At the end of Manu's time, there is not necessarily a devastation, but at the end of the Chakshushamanvantara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his illusory energy, wanted to show Satyavrata the effects of devastation. Srila Sridhar Swami also agrees with this opinion. But I'm skipping there. They have different... They have... different understandings at different times.
38.
Where are we?
I think we're 38.
You
will be thoroughly advised and favored by me, and because of your inquiries, everything about my glories, which are known as Param Brahma, will be manifest within your heart. Thus you will know everything about me.
So here the Lord's saying, he said, I'm going to reveal all the information about me through your heart. Who else was enlightened in a similar way? Probably many people, but Brahma also. Brahma Hrida. It was in his heart. Thank you. Tene Brahma Hridaya. Through his heart, Lord Brahma received information. Why? Why through the heart?
There's no one else around.
Okay, that's true. But because Krishna is situated, but that's totally true, Dhammadhar. But because Krishna is situated in the heart of all living entities, and that's the whole point of purifying our existence in this human form of life. If we purify our existence, then we'll gradually become more qualified to hear the Lord in the heart. The Lord will speak to us and you as one becomes purified, which will, if we ever get to verse 48, gradually we will. That's about
what we're doing. After this instructing the king, the Supreme Personality of Godhead immediately disappeared. The king Satyavrata began to wait for that time of which the Lord had instructed.
So just another interruption. So this pastime of Satyavrata being informed by the Lord that a boat's going to come and I want you to get on the boat and I want you to bring the herbs and all the species of life on the boat. Obviously, there's great parallels there between the Christian story of Noah and his ark. So actually, Srila Prabhupada has stated that there's no information that's not contained in the Vedic literature. So every piece of information that exists in the world, somehow or other, through some connection or other, has reference in the Vedic literature. So all of these things are referred to in Vedic literature, but through different aspects of time, a lot of them have become perverted. But that's where the original story came from such a... Could very well be. But anyway, the thing is that it's there in the memory of people. Somehow or other, these stories are there in the memory of people. Or they've heard it. Just like when Parashuram, right? Remember? Have you studied Parashuram stories yet? Here. Okay. So Parashuram, when he comes, he's gonna, kill the Kshatriyas 21 times. So how does he do that? So he kills the Kshatriyas that are ruling, then he kills their sons, then he kills their son, you know, the different generations, 21 times. So it's explained that while that was happening, many of the Kshatriya races from India migrated across, you know, to Europe and Egypt and this. So Prabhupada says they have remnants of Vedic culture in all parts of the world. Every religion has a flood. And so now you know why. Because there's a flood. It's there in the Vedic literature. Okay, now you get it.
After spreading Kusha with its tips pointing east, the saintly king himself, facing the northeast, sat down on the grass and began to meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who had assumed the form of a fish.
So he took these yoga postures and performed this yoga asanas because that was the means of self-realization in that age. So he was very familiar with those things. Seven days in the boat? No, they were in the boat a long time. They were in the boat the whole night of Brahma. Excuse me. He's going to send the boat in 7 days, right? Kusha is a type of grass. It's a sacred grass that they use in India for mats and sacrificial performances.
Thereafter, gigantic clouds pouring incessant water swelled the ocean more and more. Thus the ocean began to overflow onto the land and inundate the entire world.
From another pastime of Krishna, do you know what name of those clouds are that come at the inundation? Sambartika. Sambartika clouds. Okay.
As Satyavrata remembered the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he saw a boat coming near him. Thus he collected herbs and creepers, and accompanied by saintly Brahmins, he got aboard the boat.
Why was he accompanied by the Brahmins? Why didn't he just get some other people? Why was it the Goodness, you're getting warm. Why? They have the understanding of the Vedic knowledge, and they're going to continue that. Jita?
The saintly Brahmins, being pleased with the king, said to him, O king, please meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Keshava. He will save us from this impending danger and arrange for our well-being.
Then, while the king constantly meditated upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a large golden fish appeared in the ocean of inundation. The fish had one horn and was 8 million miles long.
Okay, so my question is how big is the circumference of the earth? 25,000, so it obviously wasn't on this planet. So 8 million miles. Hare Krishna. You want to explain that, Damodar? What was that? Oh yeah, he saw. I probably just saw the face. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, probably. Or maybe he was also quite large too, Satyavrata. Because I was also thinking, as the fish was getting bigger, you know, when he was in the pot, and then he was in the. I mean, how did Satyavrata pick him up when he got into the lake and put him into the? Because they were. Yeah, very strong and very powerful and whatever, not needing one. Go on, Baladev.
Okay, following the instructions formally given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the king anchored the boat to the fish horn using the serpent Vasuki as a rope. Thus, being satisfied, he began offering prayer to the Lord.
It's interesting how Vasuki gets to, he's in a lot of different pastimes, and he's used, his whole body is used as a rope in a lot of pastimes, in churning the ocean, Vasuki's there, in lots of places Vasuki's there. Yeah. Maharaj?
The king said, by the grace of the Lord, and those who have lost because of their self-knowledge, since time of the Lord is cruel because of this ignorance, involved in the material condition of life, full of miseries, obtain a chance to meet the Lord's devotee. I accept that supreme personality of Godhead as the supreme spiritual master.
Again, just to think of what presence of mind Satyavrata had to have to be able to offer a prayer like that in these circumstances. You know? There's the water of devastation, obviously, all these unusual, extremely heightened circumstance. And he's got the presence of mind to realize, wow, this is actually Krishna's mercy that any living entity gets a chance to meet him. And he understands the whole process. By ignorance, by turning away from the Lord, we're totally covered. And yet we get a chance by his mercy to get out of this. Prabhu, Bala was saying?
And also becoming happy in this material world, the foolish conditioned soul performs stewardship activities that result only in suffering. But by rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from such false desires for happiness. And by supreme spiritual master, cut the knot of false desires cruel.
So all of these verses, these verses spoken by great self-realized souls, they're very good for us to remember, memorize, and offer prayers. Prabhupada recommends that we offer the prayers of the pure devotees to help us fix our mind properly on the Lord. So this is today's verse. Can we get the full thing for this one, please? 48. Yeah, we'll just do the English. Okay, translation.
One who wants to be free of material entanglement should take to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and give up the contamination of ignorance involving pious and impious activities. Thus one regains his original identity, just as a block of gold or silver sheds all dirt and becomes purified when treated with fire. May that inexhaustible Supreme Personality of Godhead become our spiritual master, for he is the original spiritual master of all other spiritual masters.
So why is he saying there that pious activities are entangling? Wouldn't that be a great improvement on life if people would perform pious activities? Isn't that something that we should aspire for, coming out of ignorance and to perform pious activities? Ah, very good. Because pious activities still incur karma. So what's wrong with that? Have to come back. And then what's wrong with that? If you're coming back in a better place, in a better circumstance, and you're more pious. Yeah. So it's so entangling. You could forget, you can slip up at any moment. It's so entangling. Okay, let's read the purport. Continue on Kush. You read it off your little thing there.
In human life, what is ending?
Too long.
In human life, one is meant to undergo austerity to purify one's existence. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shuddhayet. Because of contamination by the modes of material nature, one continues in the cycle of birth and death. Karanam gunasanga asya sad asad yoni janmasu. Therefore, the purpose of human life is to purify oneself of this contamination so that one can regain his spiritual form and not undergo the cycle of birth and death. The recommended process of decontamination is devotional service to the Lord. There are various processes for self-realization such as karma, jnana and yoga. But none of them is equal to the process of devotional service.
Why isn't the process of, if they're processes of purification, why aren't they sufficient? Karma, jnana and yoga. And I want you to be really specific. Why?
They have some motivations in them which are not pure. So, and that motivations keep us here in the material world. They're not to go back to Godhead.
Okay, very good. Something else?
They do not completely uproot the desire for sentient
life. There. They do not completely uproot the desire for sentient, the bija, the karma bija, the desire for enjoyment within the heart is not completely destroyed. This is explained in?
Sixth
canto, it's explained in Nectar Devotion too. It's explained in Padma Purana. It talks about the different stages of sinful activities, how they all arise from ignorance. Yes, right. They all arise originally from avidya, from ignorance, and then desire happens, material desire, then there's sinful acts, one commits a sinful act, and then there's two results from that, parabdha or aparabdha, but continuing on, then one of the reactions is that one becomes inclined again. Inclined, kutam. They become inclined again. There's an inclination to perform sinful activities again. That's part of the suffering. That's part of the reaction, the sinful reaction. Is that one becomes inclined to do it again. And so therefore one becomes more and more entangled. But so these other processes of karma yoga, when one is performing sacrifices to better their position in the material world, that's actually feeding that desire of how to enjoy in the material world. Only that one, but it's, you know, pious. At least they want to enjoy according to the laws and the rules and regulations set forth in the Vedas. But still, there's no escape from the suffering of birth, death, old age, and disease. So in jnana, one comes to the point where he gets tired of this birth, death, old age, and disease, of all the different sufferings in the material world, wants to renounce materialistic life. But still, even that process of jnana yoga doesn't uproot that desire for material enjoyment from the heart. It might be able to purify some of the results of some activities, some of our suffering that's due to us from some activities. Just like in astrology, sometimes the astrologer will say, oh, you're suffering from the influence of your Rahu planet, and if you give in charity, you'll be able to alleviate some of that suffering. Or if you perform this yajna, you'll ward off some of the results of that. Well, that might be true, but it doesn't uproot, again, it doesn't uproot the desire to commit those sinful activities again. Derek Prabhu.
Curbing down. And it like preserves them until they come in contact with the devotee on devotional service. At that time they can accept it. So it's a curbing down. Those other processes are necessary because it's a curbing down process. But they,
there's definite benefit for performing them. That's true. But it doesn't necessarily mean that someone who's advanced in the process of jnana or yoga becomes automatically attracted. They have the opportunity, but they don't necessarily become automatically attracted. Just like Prabhupada explains, like of all the vegetarians in the world, I mean, Prabhupada speaks so heavily against the eating of meat, the killing of cows, and the sinful reaction that one incurs from doing that activity. So one might think then vegetarian fields, those people who are vegetarians, it might be a good field for preaching. And so it might be to some extent, but it's not necessarily that they're automatically attracted. But anyone who becomes a devotee of Krishna is automatically a vegetarian, but not every vegetarian automatically becomes attracted. Because why the nature of the mode of goodness, and that is a slightly more platform of goodness there, is that one becomes conditioned by those things. But you're right, it does curb them down, but it doesn't necessarily mean. So, yes. Only until that point. Yeah, very good. Okay, so we got to karma jnana and okay, so as gold, we're up to that thing, I think, right? Is that you, Zach, you get to read?
As gold and silver can be freed from all dirty contamination by being put into a fire, but not merely by being washed. The living entity can be awakened to his own identity by performing devotional service, but not only by karma, jnana, or yoga. Cultivation of speculative knowledge or practice of yogic gymnastics will not be helpful.
So here, that example of washing or purifying by fire. So following that example, the process of karma, jnana, and yoga are like washing. And that's good. They're washing, but it's not as potent as being purified by fire. But that also is a little scary. Don't you think? That kind of like, that the process of devotional service is the purification is like fire. Sometimes it seems like it might be a little more intense. And sometimes it is. Okay.
The word varnam refers to the luster of one's original identity. The original luster of gold or silver is brilliant. Similarly, the original luster of the living being, which is part of the Sakid.
Satchit Ananda Vigraha.
Satchit Ananda Vigraha is the luster of Ananda or pleasure.
Ananda Mayo Vyasa. That means that the nature of the living entity is one of pleasure in their normal condition.
Every living entity has the right to become Anandamaya, joyful, because he is part of the Sakchin Ananda Vigraha, Krishna. Why should the living being be put into tribulation because of dirty contamination by the material nodes of nature? The living entity should become purified and regain his Svarupa, his original identity. This he can do only by devotional service. Therefore, one should adopt the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is described here as Guru, the spiritual master of all other spiritual masters.
Okay, let's finish up there.
Even though we may not have the fortune to contact the Supreme Lord personally, the Lord representative is as good as the Lord himself, because such a representative does not say, I don't know what the heck we are. Where?
Second line from the top.
From the top? Oh. Anything unless it is spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore gives a definition of guru. Yare deka tare kaha Krishna upadesha madhyam 7:128. The bona fide guru is he who advises his disciples exactly in accordance with the principles spoken by Krishna. The bona fide guru is he who has accepted Krishna as guru. This is the guru parampara system. The original guru is Vyasadeva, because he is the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein everything spoken relates to Krishna. Therefore, guru puja is known as Vyasa puja. In the final analysis, the original guru is Krishna. His disciple is Narada, whose disciple is Vyas. And in this way, we gradually come in touch with the guru parampara. One cannot become a guru if he does not know what the personality of Godhead, Krishna, or his incarnation wants. The mission of the guru is the mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world.
So this is the beauty of Srimad Bhagavatam. We hear the glories of the Lord in his different incarnations in so many ways that are way beyond our imagination. And yet Srila Prabhupada always, always, always brings it right home to this point. That the purpose of this human form of life is to take advantage of the processes of devotional service, purify our existence, get out of this material, miserable world, and go back home, back to God. And now, who would have thought that that would have been the conclusion of the Matsya incarnation? And that's what makes Prabhupada the Jagat Guru, because he brings it all back to this point. So now, you get to tell me some of the things that you remember from this pastime. Damodar, you want to start?
Was he 8 million miles or was the horn 8 million miles?
The fish was 8 million miles. The horn was proportionately, but it wasn't necessarily 8 million miles long. Okay. Yeah, let's like, yeah. Okay, something else. Nanda Kumar.
I just want to fill in the detail of Night of Brahma. In the Night of Brahma, there is Pralaya.
Yes.
And the earth sinks into the waters. And the Vedas are stolen by the Hayagriva demon. And Lord appears...
Hold on.
Vedas are stolen by the Hayagriva demon.
All Vedas are stolen by the Hayagriva.
From the mouth of Brahma. Because
it's coming out of the mouth, and it's a subtle theft.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a physical theft. Because they're emanating from the mouth of Brahma, and he's going to sleep. And so maybe he's talking about
So as soon as the morning of Brahma comes... Then the Lord had to set these two things right, so he took Bara avatar to bring up the earth, and he also takes fish incarnation to bring the Vedas back to Brahma.
You guys talk so fast. Okay, I'll speak. So then the Lord had to set things right, and so he sent the Varaha incarnation to pick the earth up, and the Matsya incarnation. Okay.
So that all happened in the beginning of Swayambhu Manu, which is first Manu at the beginning of the day of Brahma. And then he again appeared as Vara Avatar during Chakshushas Manu at the beginning, and at the end of Chakshushas Manu, he again took his fish incarnation to save Mara Satyavrata.
Thank you.
Because these questions will be there in the review.
Oh, these questions will be there in the review. Oh my gosh, are you the test maker? Oh. I know. It's a great austerity for an Indian-born person to speak slowly, but it's very helpful. They actually speak so fast. They speak what they have to speak in 10 minutes. They speak in 3.
I have a quick question.